a businessman of my acquaintance, who had served with some civic leaders on boards, entered into a business relationship with some people whom he had known. And these folks at first paid their bills in a timely fashion, and everything went well. But the civic leaders whom this fellow knew, and people known fairly well around our town, things got bad in their business, and the person providing the service for them asked for the payment for the services that he had provided, and he was put off. The company continued to provide their services for a few months, regardless of the fact that they were not being paid, on the basis of a written contract and personal agreement, and after all, these were good people. They'd known one another for years. They were honorable. So the company that received the services took bankruptcy. The business that provided the services did not get paid. But the civic leaders who had started this new enterprise immediately transformed the business into something slightly different, which is legal. And they started a new business venture without paying their old debts, leaving their creditors with hundreds of thousands of dollars in obligations. The businessman who provided the services is angry. Different story. I was talking to a banker from the metro area. His bank is outside of the metro area, in the greater metro area, one might say. It's more rural, not in Overland Park. He was telling me that where he does business, things are pretty good. He does business on a handshake. People make a promise, they deliver on their promise. Their word is their bond. He said in his part of town, it's a great way to do business. He really loves doing business in this fashion. But he said, you know what? I wouldn't do business this way every place in Kansas City. We're in the midst of reading the biblical story of this guy, Joseph. It is the longest and the most dramatic narrative in the entirety of the Torah. And think about who our biblical ancestors were. I've been emphasizing in sermons recently this statement of the rabbis, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Levanim, the deeds of our ancestors are a sign for how we ought to behave. One of our Bible professors said, there's no one in the Bible you would want to be related to. Joseph's father, Jacob, deceived his father, Isaac, right? And in recompense, he was deceived by his father-in-law, Laban, and married the wrong woman. What goes around comes around, we say. Joseph, the dream interpreter, was sold into slavery as his brothers deceived their father, and they told Jacob that Joseph had been torn apart by a wild beast, and the wild beast had eaten his body, and there was nothing left to bury. Jacob suffered for the rest of his life, or nearly the rest of his life, because of that story. And now in our weekly parasha, Joseph distributes the food siloed in Egypt during the famine. Suddenly, can you imagine? I mean, you got to put yourself in Joseph's place. That's the intention of this biblical story. Suddenly, his 10 older brothers, these guys who had sold him into slavery, who had ruined his life, show up. They're standing in front of him to procure food for their family in Canaan. Joseph recognizes his brothers, but because he had been a teenager when all these events occurred, and now one can assume had a beard, had all these fancy clothes as vice regent of Egypt, his brothers did not know who they were standing in front of. Benjamin, the youngest sibling, the only full brother to Joseph, whom Joseph loved with all of his heart and soul, was not a part of the plot to sell him into slavery, but he also was not present with the brothers who came down to Egypt because their father, Jacob, wouldn't take the risk of losing the second son of his beloved wife, Rachel. Joseph knows he's got to get Jacob and his brother Benjamin down to Egypt. But he must also determine whether his brothers, the deceivers that they had been, had changed their character. What should he do with these? A lesser man would have sought vengeance, right? I mean, been deceived. You want to somehow inflict the kind of pain that has been inflicted on you. He thus launches an elaborate scheme to test his brother's character, to determine whether under the same circumstances they would do the same thing, inflict the same pain on their brother, but this time it's going to be Benjamin who would suffer. But by this scheme, he also devises to get Benjamin and Jacob down to Egypt. Effectively, Joseph is trying to determine whether his brothers are willing to play nice, whether they've learned their lesson, whether they will protect one another to maximize their entire family's best interests. Joseph wants to know in particular whether Reuben or Judah will be willing to sacrifice themselves to protect their father and their younger brother. Are they willing to stand up and be men, or are they wanting to just protect themselves? So the alternative is that the brothers will simply let the weakest among them suffer. Previously, they were even willing to cause Joseph harm to satisfy their selfish, hurt feelings. After all, Joseph was not guiltless in this, was he? I mean, he had predicted that his brothers would bow down to him and their feelings were hurt, right? What would they do? In human life, we seem to have this constant tension between survival of the fittest and cooperation. Survival of the fittest means that maximizing a person's personal welfare, as though we are primarily individuals. I'm going to look out for myself because I am most important. I'm an individual. That's my existential position. Cooperation means acting as a society, not an individual first. I'm part of a society. I'm an individual second. Cooperation means acting as though our welfare depends not exclusively on ourselves, but on our mutuality. That your welfare is an integral part of my welfare. The banker does better. His community succeeds more because he can trust his customers to do the right thing. He has this intangible thing called trust that he can rely upon. Even in these hard times, he knows that a person's word is his bond. Trust enables him to thrive. The man who trusted the civic leader now has to spend time differently. He has to determine how to protect himself. He may have to hire a lawyer. He has to spend time and money on legal concerns. He will likely, given human psychology, replay that deception over and over and over in his mind, wondering how he might have done things differently, being caught up and personally embarrassed before himself that anyone could have taken advantage of him. How could this have happened? Thus, for a limited period of time, it would seem in that situation that the deceivers will have triumphed. They are the fittest. I, the victim, am the lesser. They will appear to be stronger in the survival of the fittest, but truth is, as most of us now know, the reality is that often, like in the story of Jacob, the deceiver is eventually deceived, and all parties will waste their time trying to figure out how to recover from acting selfishly without regard for the other. How do I protect myself in a society without trust from being injured by the other? The inability to trust has created fissures in our society that cost us all dearly. How might we avoid them? A friend of mine is a physician. He was on the same building as the notorious Robert Courtney, the pharmacist who diluted the chemotherapy drugs, whom I suspect we all remember. When the Star listed the physicians who had been taken advantage of, I read the list and figured I'd see my friend's name on the list, but it wasn't there. He was in the same building as Robert Courtney. So I called him and said, "How come your name isn't on the list?" He said, "Years ago, he did something I thought was dishonest. I never sent anyone to him again." That's one way for us to act, isn't it? avoid the person whom we know might be a deceiver. In the case of the physician, it's likely that he saved some lives of his patients. But another possibility is to do what Joseph did. Joseph had taken advantage of being able to retest his brothers. Maybe they had changed. Maybe they had learned. Maybe they weren't the greedy people they had been when they sold him into slavery. Maybe he could change the relationships in his family and create trust where deception had reigned before. The result of that effort is the continuation of the Jewish people. It's the maintenance of the covenant with God. It's no small outcome. Because Joseph got an opportunity to trust once again the members of his family, history was changed. Recently, I was talking to a man who's out of work. And in order to support his family, to his chagrin, he finds that he must accept unemployment. He prefers working. In order to help himself and his family out, he took a job for a couple of days. That resulted in his exceeding the limit that he could earn according to the unemployment rules. They have refused to issue him his most recent check. Thus, it cost him more to work than it would have cost him to stay home. Now he finds that trying to help his family, he has to fill out more forms and wait for the money that enables them to eat. The lack of trust in our society, the assumption that people will cheat, which is too often borne out as being accurate, costs us dearly. He would have been able to move his family ahead, but the rules against cheating preclude that. He'd be better off being unproductive. People who are deceived feel preyed upon. We tend to draw into ourselves. We are embarrassed. We question our own judgment. We waste time protecting ourselves from future assaults. We look around. Who might get me now? We may even be tempted to victimize others as we have been victimized. Deceit makes people angry and confused. Trust oils society's wheels and moves it forward. But Joseph found himself at a place where he had to fundamentally change reality. He had to move from distrust to trust in a way that was not blind faith, because had that been the case, he would have been deceived again in all likelihood. He had to open himself up to more pain. But he had to also be realistic and to find some action which would be mutually beneficial. Joseph changed himself and thereby changed the people around him, creating an atmosphere of trust where deceit had reigned before. That should be the goal of every one of us in all of our activities. We, all of us, every day touch society. We ignore it. We forget about it. Maybe even we think it's not the case. But as I have argued from this pulpit before, we are not primarily individuals. We are primarily members of a society. Whether we have been deceived by families or friends or business, our goal should not be revenge, which Joseph avoided, but the creation of order and of trust. Had Joseph sought revenge, which would have been very easy, the Jewish people's destiny would have been thwarted. If you avoid revenge, or you attempt to create a better society, people may think you naive, assuming that the world is really organized around eat or be eaten. But in such a world, the truth of the matter is, most of us will be somebody else's food. We will be digested. We will be spit out. In the biblical story, after Jacob eventually dies, Joseph's brothers worry that even though Joseph showed that he trusted them, they worry that Joseph would take revenge. So Joseph says to them that they should get on with their lives, and he tells them about them selling him into slavery this is his line, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." If in each circumstance we ask, where is the good in this situation? And we attempt to develop that good, then perhaps we can find ways to build realistic trust between us, even those who have been deceivers, those who have taken advantage of us before. Perhaps that simply means demonstrating to someone that rational cooperation will increase both parties' welfare, that it's rational to move all of us ahead as if we were one. Day by day, moment by moment, we are asked to determine what kind of a society we choose to live in. One of the primary principles of civilization is trust. Joseph teaches both how to destroy and how to rebuild that trust, and it ain't easy. It demands that we seek to maximize society rather than simply ourselves, that the sum of the good is more important than the zero-sum game of you lose and I win. But would you rather live in the banker's world of mutuality or the businessman's world of constant defensiveness? That choice will confront each of us daily. Let us be like the elder Joseph, the one who had matured, the one who guaranteed the covenant. And let us say, even if you meant it for evil, God and I meant it for good. Can you hear that sound?